No doubt back in 1985, a young, fresh-faced Troy Rank sitting in the movie theater, eagerly watching Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah, who wasn't? Everybody was.
Saying, oh, God,
yeah.
Wish I had my own DeLorean.
That's right.
Get it up to...
Well, Troy's dad
88 miles per hour. Well, that's true.
Troy's dad's a big car guy. He could probably make a flux capacitor.
Good point.
Troy might have traveled back in time.
That's it. Or his dad may have, because his dad holds the
world
is
record.
The world record at the
Salt Flats
there in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Well,
he puts tires on his shoes and straps a rocket to his back.
Let's ask Troy Rank, presented by ROX Rocks Heating and Air. That's right. Is he your dad a world record holder?
He is at Bonneville, the flats, Bonneville. He got up to 261 in exit speed this year. His record, though, you average your speed. It's right around 256 was his average speed over two runs over 2 days. And he's 78, so it was pretty cool. It's the fastest he's ever been in a race car. He had a record at Bandimere Speedway when I was growing up. I think he was 252 miles per hour in a quarter mile in his top field dragster. And then to go the fastest he's ever been almost 40 years later.
Wait a minute. How can you get up to 252 miles per hour in just a quarter mile?
Well, those cars now go 330. It's nitromethane. Those cars are, if you've ever been to Bandimere and watched the top field dragster, they literally launch like rockets. They hit gas, the tires like go down and then they leap out. I mean, it is amazing. That was one of my favorite things would be watching his car from the behind. You just see the tires get skinnier as they go and it happens literally in a blink.
That reminds me of me being in college going from Portland to Idaho in like 2 hours. I mean, in a rainstorm, I was flying. I was absolutely flying.
The future is great, though. I loved Michael J. Fox. I did a speech in English class, sophomore, junior year, of how to be Alex P. Keaton from Family Ties. I loved Back to the Future. I watched it like a month ago. That's a remarkably well-done movie. Even now, it has staying power.
Right, it stays through the generation. Still good. It's one of those movies you can always watch and be like, that's a good movie.
By the way, we're referencing it today because in the movie, he goes back to the future on October 21st. Today is October 21st. So that's why we're doing it. So anyway, carry on.
Yeah. So anyhow, what do we do? Hey, Troy's on. What do we got? Just we're talking about Back to the Future or just Bronco stuff?
We haven't even got into anything yet.
Oh, okay.
So it's a blank canvas, Mark.
It's a blank canvas. Yeah, that's great. It is a great question. Chiefs. I mean, you know, the record against the Chiefs, we haven't beaten them at home. This surprised the heck out of me since 2014. Obviously, we haven't won one since 2015. We've talked to you about this before, but, you know, we were talking about all the blitz schemes that have been going on with the last couple of weeks. And the last 2 weeks, you know, most teams haven't really blitzed Patrick Mahomes. They've dropped a lot of eight. They've played a lot of zone coverage. They've really tried to just kind of almost mush rush. What is the plan for the Broncos? Are you going to stick with the blitzing package? Are they going to pull off of some of that this week?
Well, I mean, it's easier to blitz Cam Newton, certainly, and Sam Darnold than Patrick Mahomes. And it's a week-to-week league. You know that more than anyone, Mark. That I do think you've got to pick your spots, though, in terms of a sneak blitz here and there because it can create a turnover. You know, if you can send a corner, if you can send a safety that creates get a hit and a deflection or whatever, you can't blitz as much as they blitzed the previous 2 weeks. You can stay aggressive, though, and with them getting A.J. Boye back, their secondary not only played its best game last weekend, but now they're going to be healthy to where you have Ojemudia at one corner, you can have A.J. Boye at the other, you can have Callahan at the slot where he's been terrific, and Bosby in sub-packages. I mean, their secondary looks nice for the first time, it feels like, in a long time, but you've got to be careful blitzing Mahomes, clearly. I mean, if you blitz Mahomes with Tyreek Hill and those quick slam, I mean, it's trouble. So I do think, though, you've got to pick your spots, just like he had the double safety blitz at the end. The first time Vic's ever called that in that last play, he's got to find two or three times to dial it up to help create a turnover.
The idea of the importance of this game, what would signify a feeling of success out there for the Broncos and Bronco fans? Does it have to be a win, Troy? Or I'm gonna use this phrase: is there such a thing as a good loss if a team that you've lost nine straight times to you compete with? But ultimately lose a close game too. Is that progress?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe as Broncos fans we'd be talking like that, or the Bronco fans would have to entertain that conversation that there's a good loss to the Chiefs. I mean, you know, Chiefs fans are acting like this never happened before. The Broncos owned the Chiefs when Peyton Manning was quarterback. I mean, the Chiefs, the rivalry flipped in 14, and since Peyton retired, actually the last game Peyton played against them in Denver, he lost. That was that weird game where he broke the record and got benched, and they'd lost 9 straight, and the average of those defeats, to your point, Mike, is 12 points a game. So they've struggled to be competitive in these losses. Last year was they bottomed out, outscored 53-9. So there is something to say. You know, normally I'd say no, there's no such thing as a consolation prize, but where they are in the season, if you played them well, then you turn around and win the next two games where it's going to be a pick'em kind of game against the Chargers, and they might be favored against Atlanta even on the road, and you get to 4-4 at the halfway point. You could argue that, hey, you beat the Patriots, you play the Chiefs closely, then you win 2 more games and win 3 or 4. That would be the argument. Is, you know, if this was in December and you lost and you were struggling to try to stay in the playoff picture, I'd say no, it's a must win. But I don't think it's a must win right now. But you've got to make it a 1-score game. For me, you've got to be in position in the fourth quarter with, you know, 8-10 minutes left where it's a 1-score game. And can they do that? And then you're at home, and who knows? You know, you get a cheap turnover, you get a big play, whatever it is. The Chiefs have been vulnerable this year. They're way better than the Broncos. I'm not saying that. But they don't look like the team that the Broncos played last December that was just rolling through people. They look like a team that's a little vulnerable. Defensively, they've been vulnerable. Mahomes hasn't put up his Star Wars numbers yet. Doesn't mean he won't. He's certainly capable any weekend. So you've got to be within a score of the Chiefs, you know, 10, 8 minutes left in the game.
Take me through the evolution of this offense. What does it need to become? Where's it at, and what does it need to become?
Well, we saw hints of what it could become because it showed some balance. They ran more than they passed last week because that's what they were doing well, and they should have, frankly, run a little more in that last drive where Drew threw the pick. That was just they put him unnecessarily in danger. But this offense needs to become an offense, if you look at Shurmur, that runs well, that opens up the deep strikes where those don't have to be dimes with, you know, two guys, you know, on a guy and throwing a guy open, that you've run the ball so well that those deep strikes are present themselves with clearly favorable matchups. So what it needs to become is stay balanced. You know, we are throwing 30 times a game, 30 to 35 times a game, and you're able to run for, you know, around 115 to 120. And we've got back-to-back 100-yard rushers. That's certainly progress. They were physical last week. That was, I mean, the Jets' running numbers are a little skewed because Melvin Gordon had the one big run. But what it needs to be is where you can run when you want to, not when you have to. And theoretically, with Gordon and Lindsey, yeah, I played Lindsey more, but those two, you should be able to run the football to create more play action. And I would say, don't be afraid to use double tight end sets now that you have Okwuegbunam and Fant should be available this week.
Can you use those two together?
Yeah, I think you can. Well, again, Albert O's going to have to block better at some point because you see him out there and you're not thinking he's going to do anything but catch the football. And that was like Drew Luck had him on his fantasy league team in the first half. But you've got to get to a point where he can be a functional blocker. But in the meantime, you can put him in together on third down and in the red zone. Remember, Mark just asked, how does this offense get better? They're terrible on third down and terrible in the red zone. They rank like 29th and 30th in the league. So that's where you can use them down there where, hey, yeah, you know we're not running, but it's, you know, we're at the 5-yard line. Who are you going to cover? How are you going to cover Fant and Albert O and Patrick? Like, you're going to have to make at least one tough decision. So that's when you can use them together for me, third down and in the red zone.
All right, so your dad did 250 at age 78?
No, he did 261 at age 78 a couple weeks ago. 252 was when I was like 12 years old at Vandermeer. The flats goes over like 5 miles, and they record your time starting at the second mile, third mile, fourth, then you get like an exit speed. So it's just on that. Vandermeer is different because you're literally quarter mile. Like it happens like you're going down your block.
My point is that 261 at age 78, I think we got to get Troy's dad and poolside together.
My dad would get My dad would get 3 at 81. My dad would get 3 reps on the bench with 261.
I saw that picture of
you. We gotta get the two of them together.
Instagram? My God, is he in good shape, Mark?
At 81, right? He's a freak show. Poolside's a freak show.
Holy crap. I couldn't believe what his age was. I was like, that can't be a recent picture. And I was
That was the day before he took that picture. Said mom told me to come. Mom told me I had to put a tie on. He's in a tank top and a tie. Go, let's go to dinner.
What was his like when you were growing up? What was he like? Just 250 and ripped? Like he was just that guy?
No. He was always, you know, he was between 190 and 200 pounds and just chiseled.
Okay.
And he always lifted. He's. I'm telling you, my dad could do reps with 225 at 81. I bet you could rep off 5 or 6.
We gotta get you the two dads together. That'd be quite a conversation.
Yeah.
All right, Troy. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure, guys. Take care.
Troy Ranker, Denver 7 Insider, Colorado Sportscaster of the Year. He is presented by ROX, Rocks Heating and Air.